Welcome to the Misfit Stars podcast. I'm Shannon Curtis.
And I'm Jamie Hill. Hi, everyone. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, Jamie.
How's it going over there?
It's A-okay over here.
Do you know what?
What?
Is special about today's podcast?
What?
It's episode 50 of the Misfit Stars podcast.
Whoa. The podcast is over the hill.
You know what that means?
What does that mean?
It means that this is our Silver Jubilee episode.
It's our Silver Jubilee? What does that mean?
That's like 50th anniversary celebration. It's a Silver Jubilee.
Is it? I thought 50 was golden anniversary.
I don't know.
Did you look it up? Or are
I Googled it really quickly, but maybe I screwed up.
I could be wrong, too.
I don't know. Uh-oh.
Now
hey,
we have
hey
to know.
Hey, Siri, is the 50th year the golden or silver?
Okay. I found this on the web. There is the 50th year the golden or silver. Check it out.
Check it out. Okay,
what does
cool.
she say? Well, by the way, Jamie has his Siri set to a South African voice, which is really fun. That's the voice that we use all summer long when we're getting directions from place to place on tour. And so we get to make fun of how the South African Siri voice mispronounces a lot of American words. It's endless entertainment.
And not mispronounces like we're making fun of a South African accent. Mispronounces like misinterprets vowel combinations
yes.
in a way that no one who knows how to read the English language in any accent would do.
Yeah. But the other thing that about the South African Siri voice that we learned is that one thing she's really good at is pronouncing German words for some reason.
Hmm.
When we went to take our car in to get service at a Volkswagen dealership a while back, she directed us to the Volkswagen dealership, you know, street by street directions. And then when we turned onto the street for Volkswagen, she as we were arriving, she says, "Arrived at Volkswagen." And it like it's turned into this like serious like
goose stepping Nazi yeah. Siri. That's what's up.
It's really bizarre.
Very eerie.
Anyway, we digress. Did you find out what the golden or silver anniversary is?
Yeah, so for anniversary, it is the golden one.
Oh, okay.
Right? But I'm now Googling what is a silver jubilee. Because that's important information.
I've never heard the word jubilee.
Silver jubilee. Oh, it's the 25th anniversary of a significant event.
Oh.
Which makes sense. It's half of gold,
yeah.
right? Well, I screwed that up. Well, we'll just edit the first 5 minutes of this podcast
out. It's the golden anniversary.
Yeah.
Sort of week-iversary, because it's not...
Yeah.
It's not annual.
No, it's a week-iversary.
It's the week, yeah.
More like W-E-A-K-iversary.
This is falling apart.
No, we're doing great.
Just all over the place.
This is scintillating.
In multiple ways, it's falling apart.
Our people are taking notes. Our people are driving off the road in their car because they're enthralled. They can't believe they're listening to something this amazing.
Okay, anyway, 50 does sound like a really impressive number, though, and I like that.
Yeah.
And also means that we're just 2 weeks away from our actual first anniversary of the podcast.
Yeah, but we took two weeks off, so it could be right around now.
Well, no, we released the first episode on Thanksgiving week last year.
We did?
Year. Mm-hmm.
So how did we manage to take 2 weeks off and still have this be the 50th episode?
I don't really know.
That's
I'm not
52.
Sure. I don't know. We'll work it out.
All right. We'll
figure it out before we reach our anniversary.
I think what people
anyway,
like the, you know what I think people like the best about the Misfit Stars podcast?
This?
The rigorous preparation.
We clearly rigorously...
We thought it through.
Prepared this.
Yeah, we thought through what we're going to say about it.
Right.
We got our facts straight. We got our figures straight.
We got, we got nothing straight, actually.
Cool, we did great.
Hey, so welcome.
Oh, yeah, hi, everyone.
To our 50th episode.
Oh, hi, listeners. What's happening? Hey, if you're a new listener, first of all, we're so sorry. And also, welcome. It's nice to have you. It looks from our statistics like we might have had a couple new listeners last week.
That's wonderful.
Pretty cool. Thanks for joining us, everyone.
Yes.
It's uphill from here. And thank you to our new supporters also. Whenever we get a new supporter, it just really warms the cockles of my heart. Not sure where the cockles are.
What exactly are the cockles?
I don't know.
That's a weird word.
Are they
we not use that word?
Are they anything but an expression? Is there actually a cockle?
I'm not sure, but I just would like for us not
Cardiologists, chime in, please.
I'd like for us to not use that word. I took plenty of anatomy classes in college. There's
no
such.
Cockles?
No such.
That's true. You have a biology degree.
Yeah, no.
I guess you know about cockles. Mm.
Or not, because they aren't a thing.
Yeah. So right. Fair.
So thank you to our new supporters. You're right. Whenever we do get a new supporter, the areas around our heart do feel warmed.
Yeah. I imagine that cockles are just like heart supports somehow.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, not sure.
Well, it does mean a lot, because what it means when somebody becomes a supporter of this podcast, it means that they have had a little conversation with themselves and they've said, you know what? This podcast is pretty cool. And it brings some joy and insight into my life. And I value it.
And some jubilee knowledge.
And so, some useless, potentially incorrect knowledge about anniversary markers.
People going home today, you know what I learned on the pod today, honey? The 50th anniversary is a silver anniversary. And the spouses are like, no, that's not right. It's gold. Like, but Jamie said.
And there was something about cockles. And
it was on a podcast. I think that means it has to be true.
Yeah. So thank you, those of you who have become supporters.
Yeah.
Thank you to those of you listening to this and somehow have arrived at the conclusion that you too want to become a supporter.
Yeah.
If you do want to do that, there's a really easy way to do that. You go to misfitstars.com/join. Mm-hmm. And that is the page where you can just very simply, easily walk through the steps to become a supporting member of this podcast, because this podcast is a member supported podcast, meaning that, a lot of the episodes are free for anyone to come listen to.
Yeah. There's no ads.
There's no ads.
Yeah.
But it is made possible by the monthly contributions of our supporting members.
Yeah.
And if you become one of those supporting members, A, cool points for you automatically.
Yeah.
B, you become one of our misfit stars, one of our stars. It's this, you know, I guess exclusive group.
Self-selecting
exclusive
group. It's both self-selecting and exclusive, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You can just become part of a secret exclusive society.
That's right.
Well, it's not secret, we just told you about it.
That's
but it's exclusive.
Shh.
Yeah. Don't tell everyone. Actually do, because then we'll have more subscribers.
Yeah. And you know what? The support that we get from our supporters, it actually matters. We actually just got our monthly installment of that support just a couple days ago.
Yep. Comes at the beginning of the month, every month.
It is one of those things that comes in and we're like, oh, that's really helpful. Yeah. You know?
And because you know what else comes in around the first of the month? Bills.
That's right.
It works out great.
So thank you so much to those of you who have thrown your support behind us. If this podcast means something to you, you enjoy it in your life, you want to grab hold of this other small way to support what Jamie and I are doing in the world vis-a-vis this podcast.
Yeah.
Come on over.
Yeah.
Become a star at misfitstars.com/join.
And you know, while you're on the computer doing Misfit Stars related stuff, quick pop on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to this and leave a 5-star review, like rate and review.
Oh yeah.
Stars and a review, right? Mm-hmm. Rate and review. That would actually be really helpful to us, because when a podcast has a number of good reviews, then that podcast hosting services algorithms, like the iTunes or Apple Podcast algorithm or whatever, it puts it higher in people's "you might also like this" suggestion list.
Yeah.
And imagine if people who like the same stuff you like got shown Misfit Stars. And
it could be cool.
And then they could listen to it. Yeah. Maybe they'd be like, you know, aside from the misinformation about Jubilees, it's actually pretty good. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you for doing
that. In my
defense,
I haven't been married 50 years, so how on earth would I know that?
How would you?
Yeah. Other than the pocket computer I have that has access to the sum total of the world's knowledge.
Well, she kind of sets you straight anyway, so that's all right.
Yeah.
So after the break today, we have a listener topic.
We're going to take a second stab at Scott's listener
topic.
That's
right. We attempted to do this one last week, but we've kept the first part of our podcast very short today so that we will actually get to the listener topic after the break. But
talking last week.
We did. Yeah. Our listener topics come from our supporting members, from our stars. They are the ones who get to suggest these listener topics. And so if you become a member, you can too.
Say, for example, that you're listening to this. You're not yet a supporting member, but you've been listening to a few episodes. You're like, A, I find this enjoyable. I might keep doing it. B, I have something on my mind that I would actually love to hear Shannon and Jamie talk about.
Yeah, you could
do
that.
Well, you could suggest it if you're a supporting member.
That's right.
I'm just saying, MrStars.com/join.
So anyway, Scott, who is a member, did this, suggested this topic. Mm-hmm. And it's on how we maintain social grace and open minds when we encounter someone of a different belief or value system.
Mm.
Do we always succeed at doing those things?
We're not going to talk about
probably
that yet, Shannon.
Probably not, but we'll get to that at the end, the second half of this episode today after the break. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the meantime.
So what did we do this week? We did some stuff.
Yeah, we did. Happening around the house.
It was a cool week.
We've really kind of I feel like maybe crossed the transition period.
Yeah.
Of coming home from tour, getting used to being home, and now into now we're doing productive things at home stage of things.
It's cool. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, me too.
I feel like the transition went well. I don't feel stressed out. I feel like I could be doing a better job at doing a little more reading, a little bit less phone, but stuff's just been interesting lately online, and, Well, how about that election?
That's right.
But yeah, I did a bunch of music stuff this week. First of all, I have been working really hard at mixing Johnny Zachman's record. It's coming along great.
It sounds so good.
It's starting to sound really cool. And I combined a day of that with some mentoring of this new sort of artist, producer, engineer friend that I have just made. Mm-hmm. It's a really cool situation. So I met this guy. This guy's name is Jubilee. And he's just a lovely human being. I met him in the funniest of ways. Like, we had a little pair of speakers that we weren't using.
Yeah.
And so I put him on the internet to sell.
Yes.
And he replied that he would love to have them, but he was the second person to reply.
Right.
They ended up going to the first person. Right. Because that's how you have to do that.
Fair's fair.
But he was just super friendly and started a conversation.
Yeah.
And then and he's like, could we meet up for coffee and talk? I'd love to pick your brain about stuff once he kind of found out what I did, and, you know. And so we met for coffee and hung out for like, I don't know, 2 hours or something. It was a long hang. And he's just like, just this really neat, like just smart, super fast mind. I'm kind of like that too. I move quickly, you may have noticed, you know. And so like we covered a lot of ground and it was just really engaging and neat conversation.
Yeah.
Toward the end of which he said, would you mind if I came and just watched you work one day? Because I've literally never seen a professional do this.
That's awesome.
He's completely self-taught and he's just been figuring stuff out.
Right.
But he is so me 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So like 20 years ago when I didn't have anything really but dreams and a little computer and some ideas about production, I would just read anything I could get my hands on.
Right.
And he's doing the exact same thing. Like now with access to the internet, he can do it way better than I could 20 years ago.
Right.
There was internet, but it wasn't like now. You
right,
know?
Right.
And so like he's reading manuals obsessively of gear that he doesn't even own just to right. understand how gear works.
Right.
Like he figures, like he told me this, he's like, I figure if I read about how 10 different compressors work, I'll learn kind of how compression works.
That's amazing.
Which is brilliant, right?
So he's just hungry for information
and
knowledge.
Hungry, hungry, hungry. But he's just, you know, he's an autodidact and he's never had an opportunity just to sit with someone who actually knows what they're doing and watch them go.
Well, and he's an artist who also, right? So he's writing.
Primarily, really.
He's writing music and like figuring out the production stuff, which he, it sounds like he also enjoys.
Yep.
But working out the production stuff as a way, as a means to record and produce his own music that he's making.
Yeah.
Which is, that's so great.
I mean, seriously, like setting up a situation intentionally whereby you can be a self-empowered artist who has like production control over their own work. And that's a big deal.
Apex goal.
Ideally, I wouldn't have a job. You know what I mean? Ideally, like every artist would just be so up to speed
as a producer.
Yeah. Every artist would be so up to speed as a producer and engineer that they could just make their own stuff. I mean, there's a value for an outside opinion and all of that.
And also for each person, like some people just aren't interested in that kind of stuff.
That's
like,
right.
I write songs and I can make my own like songwriting demos and stuff, but I don't have the level of interest in the process of like what makes a compressor work or, you know, all those details.
Although that said, I see your Pro Tools sessions and I get stuff and you put a compressor on and the knobs are not in the default places.
Okay, sometimes I
You have been doing things.
Sometimes I fiddle, but I don't have the passion to take those things to the extent that you do, you know? And it sounds like Jubilee actually does also have an interest in that too.
Real interested,
So, but it's really cool that he's able to come over and like, it was fun to be a fly on the wall listening to you two discuss EQ and dynamics and...
It was an interesting, it was an interesting thing for me to do because what I really had to do is I had to, because when I'm working, I'm just sitting there working and I'm just doing stuff in an intuitive way. And I really had to take it from one side of the brain to the other side of the brain.
Right.
And be like, okay, here's an instinct I'm having. Before I do the thing, I have to explain the instinct and then the thing that I think I can do to satisfy this thing that I'm hearing.
Right.
And then go about doing it.
Kind of has to make your own process a little bit more rigorous if you have to say it out loud as you're doing it.
Yeah.
Like you're checking your work.
Yeah, absolutely. Like and also trying to explain it in a way that makes sense to someone who understands some stuff and is super smart, but for sure doesn't, you know, understand a tenth of what I do just because I've been doing it for so long.
Right.
But it was really rewarding too because also like he's super, super sharp, super fast and picks stuff up immediately, like picks it up immediately in the way where the follow-up question he asks makes it just transparently clear that he not only understood like at face value what I said, but also implications of what I said. That's cool.
I bet that was rewarding.
Oh, it was great.
We shared a meal with him too while he was here and got to know him some more. And I'm always interested in somebody who's making music, who's like writing, you know, like what's your motivation for writing? What is it that you have to say, you know? And it became really clear that he writes from a place of, I have to tell my story.
Yeah.
Like he's got stuff that he's experienced in his life and a perspective that he wants to communicate through art making.
Yeah.
And that to me is like always the most compelling thing. Like you, and we talked about this at dinner too, like you can be, you know, as talented as anyone else on the planet, more talented than anyone else on the planet. You can, you know, be rehearsed, you know, you can learn all the engineering, you know, mm-hmm. ins and outs. You can, all that kind of stuff. It doesn't matter a thing if mm-hmm. you don't have something to say.
So true.
It is the foundation of everything. So it was fun to hear like his story, a little bit of it. And I'm eager to hear more of the music that he's making. Apparently he's written like bajillion songs and
like close to 60.
That's amazing.
So, written and recorded. I mean, again,
starting from a
place where he's just getting started. Yeah, it's
right.
wild.
Yeah.
And so he's in the process of like compiling his what he considers to be his 10 best, the ones that he's the most proud of. And we're gonna get a Dropbox folder going together.
Awesome.
And we're
Very
gonna
cool.
sort of see what he's about.
I posted about this on Facebook the day after he was here. So some of you who are listening who might have seen this on Facebook have already seen this, but he mentioned something kind of like in passing as we were like wrapping up the evening that really struck me and like I've been really thinking a lot about since then. And I'm not even sure, I can't even remember how our conversation went there, but he said, music loves everybody.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to be. That's why I want to do this.
Yeah.
And I just... I'd never really considered it from that perspective, but... You know,
and he prefaced it with one comment that kind of contextualizes it.
Okay.
It might help the listeners a bit, which is music doesn't choose who listens to it.
Right.
Music loves
That's
everybody.
Right. That's right.
Wow, how deep.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I think about that in terms of like when I'm creating something, you know, I'm writing from my own perspective, my own experience. I'm getting it out. It's, you know, it is very meaningful and personal to me in that way. And then we've talked about this on the podcast before too. Like once you make a song and you put it into the world, it doesn't belong to me anymore then, right? It belongs to whomever's listening and making it part of their lives or their world. And I'd never really considered the idea that that's like an act of love, you know?
Yes. Well, and you know what's amazing too is like we've had the experience multiple times, you and I, were, you know, apropos of your material, maybe at a house concert, you know, someone will come up and be like, I love this song, blah, 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 whatever the song is. I just love so much that you wrote a song about X. And the thing that they're like, you wrote a song about X, is not at all what to you, and therefore to me, the song is about.
Right.
You know what I mean? But like, they're not wrong.
Right.
Like to them, that's what the song is about.
Exactly.
Which means that that's what the song's about.
Right.
Them.
Right. Right. Absolutely. It's really like, it's sort of like an interesting metaphor for like, just how we exist in the world too, right? Like we talk a lot about on this podcast how like, you know, staying on our side of the street in our interpersonal relationships,
yes,
you know.
Yes, we do.
And like those, that kind of just like healthy boundary living, you know. But it's kind of similar, right? Like I, you know, would I want to impose my own view or perspective on any one of my songs on anyone else? Or do I want them to have the freedom to come to it as they are? You know, as like that's what love is, right? Love is being able to come to something as you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so it I don't know, it seems like a sort of a beautiful like umbrella metaphor for just existing in the world. You know, we offer ourselves as authentically and in as true a way as we can, and then we let it go.
Yeah.
You know? And it just seems like that's a neat metaphor for sort of how to live in a loving way toward the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Our buddy Jen commented on that post you made on Facebook and was like, that should be your next t-shirt. And you were very accurately, you were like, man, that should be Jubilee's next t-shirt.
Yeah, absolutely.
His idea.
I would buy a Jubilee t-shirt that says music loves everybody.
Yeah, right?
I absolutely would.
Yeah.
I hope that I get to buy that t-shirt one day.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. You know, I feel like this conversation actually, did you have something else to say about it?
No, keep going.
I just feel like this conversation really kind of like dovetails very nicely into the experience we had yesterday.
Mm.
Which is that we drove down to Salem, Oregon.
Yeah.
To install a...
Kind of like a recording studio.
We installed a recording studio. It was more than just a music computer.
Because
that was the original like goal. But we can talk about how that goal sort of ballooned and blossomed into something bigger. But we installed a recording studio in a center for unhoused youth.
Yeah, a transitional facility for youth 18 to 25.
Yeah. And I just feel like our conversation with about music and what it means in the world really dovetails nicely with that. So why did we go to Salem? To give people the background.
Yeah, sure. So so we went to Salem because we have a very dear friend, Shantae. And Shantae has been just a dear person in our life now for like, what, 7 years?
I think
we figured out yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She attended a house concert and then went to another one the year after that. So that was 2012, 2013. And then 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, she has hosted house concerts mm-hmm. six in a row now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And just our relationship with her has just been so rewarding. She's just got the coolest family. The whole thing is great. They're just, everyone is lovely. And their friends are cool and wonderful people. And the vibe is just always so neat. Everyone's so creative and it's mm-hmm. just great.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. And so Shantae just got a new job this spring as the program director for Host. It's been there for like 30 or something years.
And it's been there for a long time, yeah.
Yeah, and they do amazing work. They do it's transitional services for kids in the position of being unhoused.
And kids, not meaning like children, because
right.
these are people, their target population is
18 to 25.
Youth 18 to 25, yeah.
And so we went there to do a Gift of Music concert on our tour this summer. And that is something we've done for the last couple of years in our album fundraiser, where if someone buys this level of support package for our album fundraiser, we will go perform a concert for a group of people or in a place that wouldn't otherwise probably have access to one of our concerts.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so like, for example, a transitional shelter for unhoused youth. And it was an amazing experience. The kids are so wonderful. And, you know, I say kids because, like, they're technically adults, but that 18 to 25 age, man, it's like, yeah, you can be tried as an adult, but your frontal lobe isn't even baked until the very end of that age range.
Also,
you know what
you're
I mean?
Saying kids because literally any of them could actually be our children, given our age.
Right? Yeah, that's no joke. It's really true.
Yeah.
And also, like, there was a really joyous sort of childlike atmosphere, not like in an infantile kind of way, but like in
playful.
Just playful, trying to, it seemed like there was a lot of intentionality with them. Whether they would like be able to articulate this or not, I'm not sure, but there was just so much play among all of them.
Yeah.
And you know, they've all been in such difficult situations. I mean, a lot of them living on the streets.
Yeah.
I think pretty much all of them living on the streets for at least a night or two before they found this place. You know, uh-huh. Some of them still living on the streets.
But coming in for day services.
Coming in for day services mm-hmm. and then going back out to fend for themselves overnight, you know?
Right, right.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And so we did this concert and there's this one really sweet kid, and you should pick up the conversation here and talk about how he sort of shanghaied you after the concert.
Yeah, so we met a bunch of the kids before, like we had built in time to sort of like meet and greet and get to know people before the concert, and then we sat down for the concert itself, and so I'd met pretty much everyone, you know, that stayed for the concert beforehand. This one particular kid, we'll call him S for this conversation.
He did sign a release that we could use his name and likeness for a photo, so. It's on my Facebook if you want to go look.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but he sat, you invited him to sit next to you during the concert. And so he did that.
He's real shy, real withdrawn. And it just seemed like maybe he could use a buddy and was kind of a loner.
Well, and Shantae had also pointed him out as being somebody who was particularly interested in music.
That's
and
right.
So you had had him sit next to you. And I noticed that he was like looking at your mixer sometimes, you know. But honestly, most of the time during the concert, he was sitting with his eyes closed, hands kind of like folded on his knees
mm-hmm.
and just taking it in, you know, like just
intentionally
absorbing, you know, the experience in a really just, in an intentional kind of way. And then after the concert, we were hanging out some more and he comes up to me and he's like, would you come with me for a minute? Back to the art room. And they have like a room, you know, sort of like as part of the facility.
It's at the end of the hall, at the end of facility.
And it
just
was
down at the end.
It's their like art/music room. And we'd been in there earlier in the day. So I knew we were going and he showed me, and in the music room, I should say, they had a keyboard that people could play. They had a couple of guitars and then lots of art supplies and stuff. People would do painting and all that kind of stuff. So just a couple of, and like some hand drums, you know, some minimal instrument making, music making instruments.
Kind of stuff you could probably find at Goodwill. That's probably where they found it. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah, like, donated.
It's just a hodgepodge.
Donated stuff. So, but he brings it back there and he pulls out this, this like,
legal pad.
Notepad, like a legal pad. And he had written on it, like 4 pages of lyrics, meticulously written out. This was not his first draft because like there were no scribbles or like messy. It was like clearly lovingly written down, you know, transcribed onto these 4 pages. And he's like, this is a song that I wrote. And he had 2 pages that were labeled at the top with the letter S. And he had 2 pages that were labeled at the top with the letter C. And he explained to me that, you know, in the song, there's a subconscious voice, which is the ones with the S, and there's a conscious voice, which is the pages with the C. And I imagine that when the song is recorded, that like the conscious voice is like over here in the headphones, and the subconscious voice has like, you know, a treatment on it over here that sounds.
Shannon
a little
is
different.
Gesticulating to her right and left, yeah. respectively, for people who can't see the podcast.
Which is everyone but you, yeah. Right? So. But he had it all thought out, like how the song would go if it were recorded as a recorded piece of music.
He had production ideas that he'd written down.
Yeah, and so like he'd thought this all through, but there was no way for him to execute that idea. Like he had it all thought out and you know clearly outlined, but no way to actually execute.
Yeah.
And so our wheels started turning.
Yeah.
Almost immediately after that. And was it that same day?
It was. So my immediate thought was, well, this kid needs a music computer.
Yeah.
And so I set about trying to get him one.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, and I got it for the facility, but like, I told Shantae this, you know, last night, like, I got it for the facility, but I got it for him.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Because really, like, I just remember how much music saved me when I was transitioning out of being homeless. Mm-hmm, you know, it's all I wanted to do, and I created an opportunity. Someone else was very generous in creating an opportunity for me to make music a full time part of my life. That person, it was Jay Segan. He was a club owner,
yeah.
And he gave me a job doing live sound
yeah.
when I arguably didn't deserve a job doing live sound.
Right.
And he really believed in me and gave me an opportunity to, you know, to start the thing that became where I am now.
Right.
You know?
Right. Thank you, Jay.
Thanks, Jay. You know, I thank Jay every chance I get. I have told him this, you know, to his face. I have told him this on Facebook. I've told him this in messages. I probably thanked him 10 times. I'll probably thank him 100 more.
That's great.
You know? But yeah, I know the power that being so passionate about something creative like that can have, you know, like in that sort of transition. I mean, it's odd that I also have homelessness in my story.
Yeah.
You know?
But I mean, it's also, you know, I don't have homelessness in my story, but music saved my life.
Yeah.
In that kind of way also, you know, like if I didn't have the opportunity to write songs and perform them in front of people and, you know, and figure out how to script together the resources to make my first little recordings.
Yeah.
You know, it was essential to me in the most like fragile transitional part of my life also,
yeah.
You know, it was a lifeline to be able to just create something to all this roiling stuff going on inside of me to have an outlet for making it heard. You know,
and just a little flag that you can plant in a little piece of the earth and say, I'm here.
This is who I am.
Yeah.
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 Totally.
It's a big deal.
Totally.
So, I did a Facebook fundraiser.
Yeah.
One of my now patented like side quests.
I like that you call them side quests.
You know?
Yeah. And your first ask was only, you had kind of did like a little back of the napkin sort of budget.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, if we can raise $700, we could, you know, get them the gear needed to make some rudimentary recordings.
Yeah, and, I figured I could get like a used iMac and maybe a crappy audio interface. I mean, anything is better than what they have because they have nothing.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And I figured they just use their own headphones and just like, you know, at least it would be something that they could just like noodle on, you know?
Yeah.
But people took to the story and went nuts.
Yeah, so you posted it on Facebook.
Yep.
That's where you did all this
yeah,
stuff,
totally.
Right?
I made a single post on Facebook about it, like just outlining the situation and people, long story short, ended up contributing like a little bit over $1,600.
So awesome.
Which just made it a completely different vision that I was able to execute. And so we really installed a little recording studio yesterday.
Yeah.
We installed a pair of really nice speakers, studio speakers, mm-hmm. A really good used iMac, really clean, really nice, powerful, a really good mid-range audio interface. With a lot of good tactile, like it was a goal for me that everything be as just like obvious to use and easy to figure out as possible, because there's going to be people using it who just don't know a thing about it. So I want it to be one knob, one function.
Yeah.
You know, no, like you hold down this button and press this button to access the sub menu, you know?
Right,
oh
right.
God, you know, like everything is like, there's, if you twist a knob, it does a thing and there's a light associated with it, period. Yeah. And that's great.
Yeah. An audio interface, for those of you who are not into the music world, is the thing that gets audio from the real world into the computer.
That's
and
right.
Vice versa.
Yep. Yeah. It converts sound into ones and zeros. That's all it does.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully it sounds good while it's doing it. And that's what you pay more or less for.
Yeah.
They all do the same thing, but you can pay, you know, $100 or you can pay $10,000. It's just a question of how good does it sound.
Right.
Yeah. And so we got, you know, but like they get better really quickly, you know, like the sub $200 ones are all kind of crap, but then like anything above $200 is much better. So we were able to do that. And that's great. And then just a bunch of microphone stands and microphones and a really good cabling for everything. A pair of studio quality headphones, the same kind that you and I are wearing right now, mm-hmm. because that's what we use around our house because they're great.
Yeah. Not to mention the computer.
Yeah, the computer. Mentioned that already. Uh-huh. But, and the computer, yep. And then what else? Yeah, cabling and just some odds and ends, just the stuff you need to hook it together and all that, you know?
Really, everything that you would need, it's essentially a fully functioning little mini recording studio now.
I could make a good record on this setup.
Absolutely.
You know, absolutely. Yeah. We could make your next record on this setup if we had to.
We have to go to Salem to make my next record? What?
Man, harsh. We got to be out of there by 4 p.m. every day. This is brutal.
Yeah. Just kidding.
Yeah, but it's amazing, you know, like that we were able to gift them, you know, courtesy of our amazing community.
Yes.
This just, it's a really good setup.
Yeah.
You know? And then we spent yesterday, like I spent the first hour like setting it up, and then I spent the next, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours, whatever it was, like
a long time
training our young friend in how to use everything he needs to know to run this system.
He totally picked it all up too. Like,
yeah, he's sharp.
You were teaching him how to roll cables, which is, there's more to it than you think if you haven't done it before.
Yeah.
And he totally got it. He was like an expert by the time the day was done.
Yeah, it's great because like I had a stack of like, you get the cables out of the packaging and they're all sort of in the twisty ties wherever they come in. But then it's like, you got to put the Velcro wraps on them. So you have to have a Velcro wrap that's attached to each cable. So it just lives with it and that makes it easy.
Right.
It's just the whole thing. And so I was like, okay, I showed him how to do the first one. And then there were like 9 more. And he screwed the first one up pretty badly, but I made him do it again. Then he did it okay. But by the 9th one, they were looking nice.
Yeah.
It was great.
Well, that's what happened to you too, right? When you first got involved in audio, like you're the engineer who was mentoring you was like, first thing you got to learn is how to roll a cable.
That's it. Yeah. And he wouldn't let me touch the soundboard until knew how to do cables right. And that was like the second day. I didn't even touch a soundboard on my first day. I was just doing cables.
That's awesome.
You know, yeah. We had to compress the time frame a bit, but you know, his first half hour is rolling cables. That's great.
Right.
But yeah, by the end of the day, like we had walked him through like making a little test garage band session and he was like cruising around in it and doing stuff.
Yeah.
And blowing his own mind. Like every time he heard a new sound, he's like, his eyes would kind of like widen. Like he plays his emotions close to his vest. You know, he's had a lot of trauma in his young life.
Yeah.
And I don't know that necessarily showing a lot of outward emotion, a lot of overt emotion is the safest thing for him all the time necessarily. Mm. But even within that frame, he was enthusiastic.
Visibly excited.
It was really, really, really sweet.
Yeah.
If you want to see the picture of this young man that he signed, like it's because like there's a client relationship kind of privacy sort of thing that places like this have to really be very careful about. And so
he gave us permission to post his picture.
He literally signed and dated a release saying that like we could post his picture,
you know,
which is super cool. So if you want to see his beautiful smiling face, just go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/hilljam. That's H-I-L-L-J-A-M, and you'll see him.
Yeah.
It was rewarding as heck.
Yes.
You know, and I imagine there will be some ongoing mentorship there.
I hope so. Well, and when we met, when we were there for the concert a couple months ago, was that a couple months ago? End of September.
Yeah, month and a half.
We met a bunch of other kids there, and a lot of them were musical. Like I heard one of them play a beautiful classical piano piece.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
while we were there. And others were singing, you know, there's one kid that had this like really cool, like almost like musical theater type voice, you know, really yeah. like a very beautiful lilting.
Love it.
You know, so yeah. a lot of them have music in them. And I'm like, I have this wish, this hope that, you know, that maybe the young friend that you trained yesterday might, you know, it sounds like he was eager to actually pass on what he learned to other people mm-hmm. at the center. You know, it'll be interesting to see what they create.
Yeah. And maybe they wouldn't be so interested in learning the engineering, but maybe he could record them.
Exactly. Exactly.
And like help them make a little, like make recordings of themselves performing that they could like carry around in their phone. Imagine how empowering that would be. Like, here's me. I'm an artist. I made this.
Right. Totally.
Holy cow.
And you know, the other thing, and you mentioned this in your Facebook post too, and I'm really glad that you said this because it's something that's been on my mind, you know, giving a gift like this, you know, it's, you know, the people who contributed, those of you in our community who contributed to the fundraising for this, this gift of a recording studio, thank you, by the way.
Yeah.
My goodness, you're amazing. You know, it's a big gift, right? It's like, all the staff who came in yesterday to see what we were up to in that room were like, holy moly.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a really nice, you know, thing.
Yeah.
In a place where people who come for services there don't have a lot of nice things,
yeah.
if any nice things
yeah.
in their lives. You know, like it's a big deal. But I feel like I've been thinking a lot about the notion that like a gift is that it's just a gift. There's no expectation,
yep.
you know, like, so when I say I have wishes and hopes, I do like, I yeah. really hope the best for this. And at the same time, you know, it's important to just maintain an open-handedness about it, you
yeah.
know? And let it be whatever these folks want it to be in their lives.
Yeah. Neat thing about it is that this computer is air-gapped. Like, it's not on the internet.
Right. That's right.
They don't get Wi-Fi at that room. Like, that. Like the only way for that computer to get on the internet is if Shantae goes down there with her phone and turns on her hotspot and
right.
manually connects it.
Right, right.
Right, which we had to do a couple of times to download a couple last-minute, like, little drivers or whatever mm-hmm. for the computer, you know? But, like, there's no way that they can't go back there and use it just to surf the internet. It's not on the internet.
Right.
Which is so cool.
It's a creative machine, and that's
yeah,
it.
That's yeah, that's it. Like, if they want to get files off it to enjoy, like, to put on their phone or whatever, they literally have to put them on, a USB drive, uh-huh. like a flash drive,
and take it to
another computer.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
It is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what a great day. It was just one of those days that we left smiling. And
yeah, it was great.
Feeling good. So, yeah. Those of you who contributed to that effort, thank you so much.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of things that made us smile this week,
yeah.
I just want to mention this quickly. Our dear friends Carmen and Nate
oh, yes.
took us on a day trip. So these are friends, people, that we have here in Tacoma. We were introduced to them by our friends Brad and Kim Loomis, whom we love dearly.
Yeah.
And they have become people who we're super fond of here, and they live in our town, and they're great. They're big supporters of independent music. They host house concerts on their own and have been for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They're just true believers. They're wonderful. They're smart. They're funny. They're great. And they offered to plan and surprise us with a day trip this Saturday. So, like, we didn't even know where we were going. All we knew is that we just had to show up at noon at their house and bring nothing and just plan to be gone all day.
Dress in layers, and here we go.
Yeah. It was great. And they took us to the Washington coast to some favorite spots of theirs there. And, oh, my gosh, it was a perfect day. Very few clouds in the sky, 60 degrees, light breeze, warm in the sun.
So lucky.
We were spoiled. It was picture perfect. Autumn foliage everywhere.
It shouldn't have been that nice on the Washington coast on the second day of November.
No, not in early November. It should be pissing down rain and 48 degrees.
Yeah.
It was great.
It was beautiful. It was, thank you, Carmen and Nate, if you're listening to this. It was a really fun day just to get to go to be at someone else's mercy, you know, and to go and see things spots that are meaningful to them that they enjoy. And it was really neat. And dang, we live in a beautiful state.
That's amazing.
Oh my gosh.
We saw two bald eagles, by the way.
We did see two bald eagles. Okay, this is how magical our day was, you all. The day, like the last spot that we visited on the coast,
mm-hmm.
it literally ended, that visit ended with a bald eagle taking off and flying off into the frickin' sunset over the ocean. I'm not kidding you.
Like, while the national anthem played.
In my head.
Yeah. We were all saluting.
I'm so glad that none of us actually saluted. That would have been weird.
Would have been amazing. Just sitting there quietly respecting the troops.
The Eagles.
Yeah.
The Eagles.
Yeah. Go Eagles. Which actually, my dad's from Philadelphia, so there's a tie in there. Go Eagles.
My gosh. This is
what?
Going off the rails. Hey, how about we take a break?
Okay, yeah, that sounds smart. Let's do that. And when we get back from the break, we'll tackle Scott's listener topic. So we're back in a sec.
Sounds good. See you soon.
Did you miss us?
I missed us. We have a listener topic.
Yeah, and it's from Scott Schreiber. And Scott says, I'd like to hear... Did you hear me snap my fingers?
Scott says,
I'd like to hear how Shannon and Jamie maintain social grace and open minds when they encounter someone of a different belief or value system.
Thank you for thinking that we do that, Scott.
That's very charitable. We appreciate that a lot. Being on tour, you must encounter many kinds of people. Side note, I know that Shannon had an interesting encounter at my house concert. Grimacing face.
That's right. I love the grimacing face.
Yeah, good.
That's true. We actually did spend a bit of a podcast over the summer when we were doing our Summer Adventures podcasts talking about that particular...
Long story real short, Shannon got, what's the word, proselytized, witnessed to? I don't know.
You can use either of those.
Yeah.
And in a pseudo-aggressive kind of way.
Yeah, it's never not uncomfortable.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, there's no way that happens. It's good.
Totally. But, you know, it's an interesting question.
Here's a sentence no one probably ever says.
What?
Yes, I'd love to hear about Jesus. I don't know. I'm just saying. Okay. So,
Scott, about maintaining social grace.
How am I doing? Am I doing good so far? Was that gracious?
And open minds.
Yeah, good, good.
You know, and we encounter all different kinds of people. And that became really obvious when we first started touring nationally, you know, like when we got outside of like just what, you know, the West Coast.
Yeah.
And we started getting into other regions of the country. Like, there are all different stripes of people out there, y'all.
Yeah.
And we meet a lot of different kinds of people.
Yeah.
And I think that it's been really good to get to know folks with different backgrounds and different perspectives, different belief systems and value systems. You know, like, I think that, like, the overarching thing for me personally has been that, you know, regardless of what's attached to a person in all those ways, like, what is it like to be in a room with them, to share space with them? Are you able to be open to each other and gracious and loving toward each other? Like, can people do that?
Yeah.
You know? And the answer is most of the time, yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's that's with a big asterisk, though, which is that one or both of the people has to not get super personally invested in the interaction.
What do you mean by that?
Well, like, if like, say, for example, in that sort of, you know, being witness to situation, like, the problem there was that in that situation, one person is super invested in, the other person is invested in you having a particular response, right? And that sort of, and that's what the whole interaction for them kind of hinges upon.
Right.
Like, where you can just exchange ideas and touch upon them, and if there's disagreement, move on, or probe them gently, but move off when it's uncomfortable. But as long as there's like a sense of, here's a thing we're doing together, and a maybe unspoken understanding that we're probably not coming at this from the same place,
right?
But let's just see where we're each at and have a conversation about it and keep things cool,
right?
You know, I think it's when like when both people don't necessarily have that commitment to let's keep things cool, that unspoken thing, that's kind of where it can go wrong, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's unusual in a social setting where you're meeting people for the first time or you know them in a really casual way for someone to cross a boundary in that way.
Yeah.
And to you know, to not respect your personhood and your right to, you know, to have your own ideas or thoughts about things.
Yeah. Your autonomy.
Yeah.
Your agency.
But there are some people who are convinced that it's their job to convince other people to think like they do.
Yeah.
And, you know.
That's weird.
Well, I mean, is it weird? Like, on one hand, is it weird?
Yeah,
like,
it's real weird. There, it's not unusual, there are, but there, it's weird.
Well, there are things about like, there are things about like how I see the world, for instance, that I do wish others, more people would think about the world in that way. Like in terms of like, you know, over the course of my life, I've learned a lot, for instance, about how I used to hold pretty bigoted views about like LGBTQ people, for instance.
Yeah.
I was raised in a tradition that taught me that that was wrong. And so I developed all these belief systems around the idea that that was wrong.
Yeah.
And gratefully, I was given opportunities in my life to undo that thinking and to change my mind, you know? And so like that's an area where like I would like for those people who don't see LGBTQ people in their full humanity to think more like that. I would like people to think more like me in that way if they don't already. Yeah. Right. So it would be disingenuous to say that, you know, I don't want to try to convince other people to think like me. Cause I mean, there are some things that I wish that I could influence people.
Although, is it that you wish that you could influence them, or is it that you wish that they would be influenced or would have some kind of a conversion experience? Like, because you don't just go around like spouting off and like seeing who's on which side, and
right.
you don't take a poll and people who are thinking wrong try to you don't proselytize LGBTQ positivity to
them. Right. I get it. I mean, but in some way I do. Like, I take the chance every chance I get to talk on this podcast about my views about those kinds of things.
Yeah, but that's not directed at any one individual person. True. In a conversation, right?
True.
Like, if you're making somebody uncomfortable, it's not personal.
Right. So I guess the point is that like, I could encounter a person who has a different point of view about something, and if we're both on board with not trying to strong arm the other person into our own point of view, then we can share ideas and look for places of connection.
Yeah.
If we're both interested in that's easier to do. It's when one person has decided it's their job to convince the other one to change their mind.
Yeah.
And that it can get tricky.
Yeah. You know what's always super interesting? Like, there's a certain aspect of this that where I feel like I can just kind of detach and just like really get interested in someone else's point of view, which is it's a really specific niche subset, which is a person who is a sort of endangered minority in one group having views that are in a weird way kind of bigoted toward an endangered minority of another group. And here, I'll give you an example.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
We have a contingent of people in our world, in the Midwest. We have a big, huge redneck lesbian following, right?
Okay.
And part of the redneck lesbian thing for a subset of them is that they are super pro-gun and Blue Lives Matter. And therefore, like, anti-Black Lives Matter and kind of pro-cop anti-Black in the way all that shakes out. You know what I mean? Some of them living very proximally to Ferguson, Missouri, right?
Right.
And so, like, a few years ago, that was, like, a really of-the-moment issue.
It was a hot-button
issue. It was what everyone in the country was talking about, including us as we were on tour coming into these people's communities 10 miles away from Ferguson. You know what I mean?
Right.
And having these really wild conversations where like, you know, like lesbians being like all pro cop about the Ferguson thing. It's like the same people broadly writ who have their boots on the necks of Black people also want to have their boots on your neck because you're a lesbian. Like,
right?
There should be solidarity here, and it's just so interesting to me to like hear them explain from their point of view, even if they're not articulating it directly, because I would never ask this probably directly, but just like talking about why they feel the way they do about that from their, you know, sort of unspoken point of view is like they're a lesbian. It's like, well, that's so interesting to me. And that's the kind of thing that I really genuinely am just like, I could listen to them talk about that all day. Like, I find it in one way reprehensible, right?
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
That's for sure one of the examples of the kind of point of view like you were talking about a minute ago, where it's like, I wish you didn't have that point of view. I would like to see that changed in you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But also, like, you have to understand in that moment that, like, you know, if someone has a deeply seated belief like that, I'm not going to be the one to change it.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I just want to listen and learn.
Yeah, fair enough. I think that's also an illustration of how I think we tend to, I mean, we do this as humans. We tend to simplify things as much as possible and put people in categories because then we can just file them away like, okay, that person is X, Y, or Z, you know? And I think this is an illustration of the fact that people are way more complex than we give them credit for a lot of the time. So like, you know, your assumption going into that kind of conversation was that, okay, the lesbian ought to be on the side of another marginalized population vis-a-vis the, you know, the Ferguson, you know, Black Lives Matter protesters. And then they blew your mind because they weren't.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? There's room in the world for someone's maybe internalized white supremacist tendencies to override the solidarity with another marginalized community.
Like they might be more white than they are gay.
Right. Yeah. Like, so humans are complex.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to remember that. Like, and I think that
when we're talking about like the rich tapestry of human existence, this is part of that. For better, for worse, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know, a lot of things, we're kind of veering off of the original topic when I'm going here, but I'm going to just say this anyways. Like, we listened this summer to a podcast about whiteness called Seeing White. We started listening to the follow-up, the next episode or the next season of that podcast called Men. Mm-hmm. And both of those and other things that I've been reading and stuff over the last few months have really started to like reinforce this idea for me that like the layers of society, the sort of strata of society, you know, where we divide each other up by race or by sexuality or by, you know, gender, what it boils down to for, you know, one group needing to keep another group down, it's just about maintaining power, right? Yep. Like it's all about that. Racism is about power. Sexism is about power. Bigotry is about power.
Yeah.
Xenophobia is about power. It all goes back to power, right? And so like you can kind of understand how like someone who has white supremacist tendencies or internalized racism, you know, that could trump, you know, a solidarity because of, you know, or potential solidarity because they are
the sort of unspoken subconscious thought process being like, well, yeah, I am gay and I get shit because of that, but at least I'm not black.
Right.
Could be worse.
That's what I mean. Yeah. So, you know, I guess it's an important lesson in that people are a lot more complex than we assume them to be.
Sure.
You know,
so true.
Yeah. But I think, you know, the how to maintain social grace, you know, for me, going into different circumstances where, you know, we know we're going to meet different kinds of people, you know, there have been times when, you know, I know that like two summers ago, we brought the show The Space Between on the road, which was a show that dealt pretty directly with divisions in our society based on race.
Yeah, and very much so.
And based on bigotry and things like that. Like,
and so, we brought it into some racist communities.
Well, and so there were some nights where I knew going in, like I felt like I was kind of going to battle a little bit, you know?
For sure.
But in here's what those circumstances taught me, which I think does relate to this topic that Scott brought up today about like how to maintain an open mind and social grace, you know, when you encounter people of different belief systems. What that taught me is that like, okay, I've been invited into this place to do this thing that I do.
Yeah.
This is the record we put out this year. You know, when we were booking these house concerts, the first single we had out in the world was a song called Hello Dawn, which was about like waking up to the idea that things are really messed up right now.
And you made a super freaking intense confrontational video for that. People were forewarned.
It was not a mystery what we were going to be bringing on tour that year. So you know, going to those places where I felt like we were kind of going to war, we were invited to be there. I had created this show. I had written these songs. We had created the show together. We, like, at that point, all my only job was to show up and do me.
Yeah.
Right? Like, my job was to show up and do the show that we came to do, and the rest is out of my control.
Yeah.
Right? The rest is up to them. And, you know, if I say that I believe that that's the way to approach the world, you know, I have to like live that through, you know? Yeah. And so it became honestly like a nightly practice of mine, especially that summer when we brought that particular show on the road, knowing that it was going to maybe rub some people, you know, and make some people maybe
pretty freaking uncomfortable.
Maybe uncomfortable sometimes, you know? That's when I began my sort of nightly mantra of sitting down at the piano and just saying, it's my job to just offer myself and love these people.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, and so, you know, when you approach the world in that way, you know, you like that's all we can do. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we can hope for the best.
Yeah. Seriously. You know? And, you know, also like, I think it's really important to like set the idea too, that like, that maintaining social grace does not mean acquiescing or not pushing back.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's something
definitely
that I feel I've had to learn is how in situations like where, because we'll definitely just have people come up to us every once in a while and it's not a frequent thing, but like just come up to us and start an inappropriate conversation. You know what I mean?
What do you mean?
Like assume for whatever weird misguided reason, because why on earth would you assume this about either you or me, that we'd be super into like some anti-immigrant kind of talk.
Right.
Right? Oh, you're from California. Especially like, you know, like, oh, you guys used to live in California. Yeah, immigrants, huh? That kind of shit.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right. Super
first of all, like, why would you even think I would be the person to talk to about that? You know what
right.
I mean? But like that aside, like, okay, it's here now. We're talking about this,
right,
you know?
Right, right.
And, you know, for my own self-respect and like just my own integrity, uh-huh. I can't just be like, haha, yeah. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But it's also important not just to insult somebody, because that's not a productive thing, you know?
Right.
And it's also not going to help me accomplish my goal of changing their mind eventually. Like, I won't change their mind, but you know what I will do if I push back at them violently is I will cause them to double down on and build another tiny candy-coated protective layer of anger around that hateful feeling they're having, you know what I mean?
Right.
When what I really want to do is be soft and encourage softness in that person.
Right, right.
So maybe they start to melt away some of those hardened calcified layers.
Right.
You know? And so, you know, asking probing questions and you know, listening, like, and not just listening to rebut. We touched on this a week or so ago, right?
Yeah.
Not listening to respond, but listening to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do I think I'm going to learn something useful from a racist or a bigot? No, not necessarily. But learning what their mindset is and the thought patterns or their life experience or whatever it might be that have led them to arrive at this place that they're at, like, that's good to know about. That's instructive to me.
Sure.
If only in a sort of jujitsu-y kind of way, right? Like knowing how someone who thinks like that thinks and where, like building my own internal database of how people who think like that, because again, they're not like, they're not a monolith.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a lot of different types of ways that people can think about stuff like this and just like learning some of the different, like are there commonalities? Are there things that people generally think or generally feel who hold these kinds of views as we travel the country, you know?
They watch Fox News.
That's a lot of it. That can absolutely be a lot of it. You know? And what can you do? I mean, if someone's watching propaganda, they're sort of lost.
I know
what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know how we get them out of that.
I don't either. Let's shut down Fox News.
Yeah.
How do we do that? Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you're right. It can be instructive.
Yeah,
to
absolutely.
Listen with that kind of an ear. And I think, go ahead.
And by being a good and respectful listener, but also in a respectful way, pushing back.
Yeah.
You know? Lots of, you know, doing yes and to stuff, you know,
that can
be really helpful. Like asking people just like, why do you think that is? Why do you feel that way?
Right.
Like really asking probing questions of the other person. It's not just like not trying to rebut, but just trying to get them. Because sometimes the best rebuttal to a factually inaccurate argument is just to let the other person play it out for themselves.
Right.
Not to immediately just like rebut and then they defend and then you're both stuck, but instead be like, interesting, tell me why you think that.
Yeah.
Why do you feel that way?
Yeah.
You know, and just let them like run the whole reel out. And maybe by the end of it, they'll be like, even if not to me, just internally like, yeah, there were a couple inconsistencies that weren't there.
Maybe.
I mean, that's the best we can
do. You're absolutely right about the notion that, like, those of us, like, so just having different, there are some things that we can have different beliefs about that don't really matter.
Yeah.
Right?
And vanilla, like, chocolate, you know.
Right. Ford, Chevy.
Yeah. You know, like Vermont, so let's not get crazy.
What is it in Vermont? What are you supposed to be?
Well, I mean, it depends where in Vermont.
Oh, okay.
No, it's not like Vermont is Chevy country.
Okay.
Right? But it's just like, it's the kind of place where, like, if you're a Ford person, you're a freaking Ford person. Okay. And screw Chevy.
But again, this is one of those issues that just doesn't really matter in the real world.
Yes, sure.
It's not harming anyone, no, really, to have an opinion one way or the other. But there are clearly a lot of things people have, you know, strongly held beliefs about that when those beliefs are acted upon in how they treat people, how they vote, mm-hmm, you know, how they interact in society, can be detrimentally harmful,
yep,
to people and to, you know, particular populations. And I think, you know, in that regard, you know, we're way past the live and let live,
yeah, right,
stage of things with a lot of that stuff. You know, like those of us, what I have learned about the structural racism in our society, what I've learned about the structural, you know, bigotry, the things that are woven into our culture, the sexism, the, you know, things that are foundational to this entire society in which we all exist. The areas in which I have privilege with regard to those areas, like, it is my, if I'm not using my voice to speak up for what's right in those ways, that is me acquiescing to the status quo, which is harmful for other people. It's like yeah, we're in a position now where, like, if those of us who can speak about and offer those moments of, you know, reflection with others about, like, their belief system, if it's a belief system that is harmful, it's our responsibility to do that.
Yep, that's, you know, true. I think that's right.
And we, you know, we're, what is the quote? That silence is always...
favors the oppressor.
Favors the oppressor.
Elie Wiesel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where we're at. And I think your point about how to sort of, you know, listen with... genuine curiosity about where someone's point of view is coming, yeah, from, and then asking probing questions to help them sort of identify, dig a little deeper.
Getting someone on the defensive never helps.
No.
And it will only serve to reinforce their views. So,
man, you know, it's hard for me sometimes, I have to say. Yeah. Like, because I can get pretty dang mad.
Yeah.
Yeah. About...
You might say, like, dang, for example. Like, that's steamy, right? Whoa.
I use curse words.
Yeah. Yeah. But then you feel real guilty about, yeah, it. No. And you blush. You're blushing now.
Yeah.
Just thinking about curse words. All the curse words you could say. Blush.
But I'm like, I feel really passionate. I think, you know, I think I have to, when I dig a little bit deeper, I think some of the rage that I can feel sometimes, mm-hmm, for people who have expressed, you know, bigoted, racist, or, you know, you name it, beliefs about people in the world. I think that part of my rage, when I'm really honest about it, may come from the notion that for a lot of those beliefs, I used to buy into that belief system.
Yeah.
Like, an older version of me was the person saying, you know, that, God, it's embarrassing to say it out loud. An older version of me was the person saying that homosexuality is a sin.
Yeah.
I mean, that's flat. It's embarrassing for me to say that.
Yeah.
You know, like...
We've all harbored, like, stupid, somewhere on a spectrum between stupid and repugnant views in younger versions of our lives. It's,
right.
It's the very rare person who hasn't. So give yourself some grace.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But it's important for me to acknowledge that I think that might be the source of some of my rage.
Sure.
It's not necessarily righteous anger all of the time. Mm. It is some part of it is a seed of me being really angry at myself for having held those views for as long as I did in my life.
Yeah, right.
Right? You know, we often... I think, see the qualities in other people that we either have in ourselves or have had in ourselves that we don't like.
Yeah.
And we transfer our anger or our you know, emotions about those things onto others.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's it's an important thing for me to keep in check, you know, yeah, in terms of my emotions about that stuff.
Yeah.
But if I can actually acknowledge that in the moment, that also maybe, you know, would help me to identify in an empathetic way from where someone like that's coming. You know?
Well, yeah, that's absolutely true. And that kind of gets back to what I was talking,
yeah,
about in terms of, like, just, like, really hearing someone out on how they arrived at their belief system, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, I think when you fully, the more fully you understand where someone's coming from, the more effectively you can maybe help guide them out of that place.
Right.
Yeah,
hopefully. I want to add one more thing before we sum up, is that if that's okay, mm-hmm. Is that part of my journey has been to figure out how to actually stand up for myself in some of those circumstances. Because my tendency with my codependency is to shapeshift in any conversation with someone to make them feel like I'm agreeing with them.
Yeah. Like you're on their side.
Like I'm on their side, exactly. Like I'm super conflict averse, and so I don't want to, I don't want to create any sort of feeling of rift with another person. Mm-hmm. But it's been really, really important for me in my own personal journey to figure out how to stand firmly in who I am and to be able to say confidently what I think.
Yeah.
Even if it's not what the other person wants to hear in that moment. For instance, in Scott's example, when he said that he remembered us having an experience with a guest at his show this summer. And this person, started off with, questions about, what is my spirituality. And I thought at first maybe she was just genuinely curious, what that part of my life looks like. And so
you're into Thich Nhat Hanh too. Cool.
Yeah, let's talk about it. That stuff. I love talking about that stuff.
Sure.
It became very clear over the course of our conversation that she had an agenda, mm-hmm. that she really wanted to convince me to think about those things in the way that she thinks about those things.
Yeah.
And it really bummed me out, first of all, because I thought we were going to have a cool conversation. But I had to, at a certain point when I realized what was happening, I had to make a decision to sort of steel myself and be like, okay, it's not authentic. I'm not being true to myself if I just let her think that I'm in agreement with her, or yeah. Do that conflict averse thing that I can do really well. Mm-hmm. But it was important for me to figure out in the moment, and it was I was super tired after the end of this conversation because I was my brain was on overdrive trying to figure out how to remain true and say the things that were true for me while also allowing her to be her.
Yeah.
It was really hard.
Yeah.
And I don't think that we ended in a place, I certainly don't think she was happy with the conclusion of our conversation. But I literally had to say to her, can we just agree that each of us has found a path that's meaningful to each of ourselves? And can I celebrate with you that you found something that really works for you? And can you offer me that also? I had to ask her to respect that boundary. And she kind of did so in a sort of begrudging way and sort of left deflated, which yeah. I guess, that's...
That worked out.
It worked out. Yeah. I don't, I doubt I'll see her again, but that's okay. That is all right.
Yeah.
That's all right.
And I feel like deflated is appropriate there.
Really?
Yeah. I feel like that worked out the way that should have.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah.
So, yeah, Scott, social grace, generally open minds, maybe not as much.
No, you talked about being open-minded.
Yeah. Here's the thing, right? Open mind is not exactly maybe the perfect frame for this, right? Because open mind sort of implies a general malleability and willingness to entertain. And there's a lot of stuff that I am not very malleable on nor willing to entertain.
Sure.
I am at a place in my life where I don't feel at all like I've learned everything there is to learn. That said, there is a certain set of core beliefs that I feel pretty strongly about and that don't feel like they're going to be changed by anybody around things generally in the social justice arena.
You can't
come at me with stuff about immigrants or race stuff or talking shit about the poor or class stuff,
right.
or any of the myriad ways in which we're terrible to one another and segment each other out into groups that we then try to oppress. I'm not going to change my mind about any of that stuff, which means I don't have an open mind.
Right.
Now, if you want to make a well-considered argument to me about the virtues of penne pasta versus spaghetti, okay, I'm listening. Holds the sauce inside the noodle. Go on. Not usually my thing, but I'm willing to listen. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But
where
someone else's humanity is involved, I don't have a real open mind. And I don't think anyone should have an open mind.
Where someone else's humanity is being threatened.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I don't think an open mind's real appropriate there at all.
Yeah, but a curiosity about how someone has arrived at those views could be instructive.
Yeah.
Maybe that's more what it is.
Wow, man, you're real screwed up. Talk to me more about you.
Social graces.
Yeah, right.
We're good at that.
Yep.
So, Scott, I hope that was something along the lines of what you were asking about. Our rabbit trail certainly took us.
I feel like people usually come for the digression. So here's
maybe
open.
So.
Hopefully it worked out.
Yeah.
But thank you. Hopefully at least you enjoyed the discussion.
And you know what? I would like to hear what you have to say, Scott and other stars in our group. We didn't mention this earlier, but people who are supporting members of this podcast become members of our private Facebook group.
You get invited. You don't have to.
You don't have to. That's true.
You could turn down the invite.
You could.
Just leave me hanging.
But I'd love to have a conversation in the group about this topic. If other people who are listening have more to say, we certainly have not exhausted the topic. So chime in. Let us know what you think. What did we miss? What do you have to say about it?
What did we get right? What did we get wrong?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, curious.
And if you want to become part of that group and you're not already part of that group, you know what to do?
You go to misfitstars.com/join and you become a supporting member. Here's the deal. Basically, it's this. If you have $5 extra per month and you like what we are doing in the world and you would like to support us in that small way, we would be really grateful for it. So you can become a supporting member of the podcast and by so doing, become a small support to what we're doing.
We'd be so appreciative.
And all those small bits of support get aggregated and turned into something much bigger. And then we do stuff with it like make this podcast, which you love, right? You're still listening.
Don't you love it?
You're still listening. You don't hate it. Or you hate listening to it.
Or you don't know how to turn off your iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hate listening to the podcast for an hour. Like, I can't turn it off.
It won't. Shut up.
Alexa, for the love of God.
You all, thank you so much for listening today.
Yeah.
We will be back again next week.
Yep.
We're inching ever closer to our first anniversary of this podcast.
Unless we've already passed it, in which case, happy anniversary.
No.
But I don't think we have.
I don't think we
Not
have.
Not sure. Every episode is a Facts and Figures episode if you don't know any Facts and Figures.
Oh, my goodness. Thanks a lot for hanging out with us. So until next week, take good care of yourselves and take good care of each other.
Yep.
And we will see you soon.
Love you guys. Bye.
Bye.